a good Friday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give Melissa Gott and her team a call at 910-251-6088. That's 910-251-6088. Well, day two of early voting kicks off across not only southeastern North Carolina, but the rest of the state, as over the last week and a half or so, we have dug into some of the details on the municipal elections coming up for the city of Wilmington. Went through some details yesterday on the city council candidates, looked at that early ballot. So if you missed yesterday's podcast, as we were having some issues with our podcast feed, all of that seems to be resolved. I'd encourage you to check that out and spend a lot of time on city council. However, a big mayoral race coming up this year, as well as two Democrats and one Republican are running. I'll note once again that this is considered a nonpartisan election, meaning that when you grab a ballot, if you are an eligible voter within the city of Wilmington, you will not see an R, you will not see a D next to anybody's name. They are considered nonpartisan on the ballot. However, they are partisans in their affiliation. Bill Saffo, the longest serving mayor in Wilmington history, is running for re-election. He is a Democrat. Jonathan Barfield Jr., who served some 16 years on the New Hanover County Board of Commissioners. He lost his reelection bid last November to stay on the county commission. He has set his sights on the mayoral race, and a longtime member of local law enforcement, 30-year local law enforcement veteran, Billy Craig, of which I have no relation to, is running up for mayor as well. There was an interesting candidate forum that took place a couple of weeks ago over at WECT. It was hosted by Channel 6, WHQR Public Radio, and Port City Daily, and I played through some of the clips last week of the city council candidates, went through some of those details. However, this morning we are going to focus on the mayoral race and some interesting things from some of those mayoral candidates. So we're going to kind of go through that together this morning and hear what some of these various candidates have to say. As for Republicans and conservatives within the city of Wilmington, this will be their best shot in decades to elect a Republican mayor. The first real opportunity in decades to make that happen. With two Democrats splitting the vote, there is the opportunity for a Republican mayoral candidate to take a stab at victory there and make it happen. So let's jump into the debate here. The first question from John Evans over at WECT News.
Mr. Craig, I'm going to ask the first question, and I'd like your response to it first, if I can. Being the mayor is like being a city council member, but there's just a little bit more to that seat. What is that extra something you want to bring to the role of mayor, and why are you the best man for the job? 60 seconds, sir.
True transparency. There's been a lot of occasions, especially with your police department. There was no transparency, and it caused a lot of good people to leave. I want to show true transparency to the citizens and to the employees of the city of Wilmington. I retired from this city. I understand what they've had to go through. I understand what it is, paycheck to paycheck.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Saffo, what is that extra something that you want to bring to this role of mayor? Why are you the best man for the job, sir?
Well, when you're the mayor, you're everybody's neighbor, whether you voted for me or not. I represent the entire community, Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, independents. My job is to get things done for this community, to work with the council, to build consensus amongst the council, to approve the decisions that we all make as a council, as well as work with our county commissioners, as well as work with our state representatives, as well as work with our folks in Washington. They all play a role, a significant role, in everything that we do here in Wilmington, North Carolina. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Barfield, what is that extra something that you want to bring to the role of mayor of Wilmington, and why are you the man for the job?
You know, serving as chair of the county commission for 4 years, vice chair for 3 years, that's pretty much like the mayor and mayor pro tem, but in a greater capacity. recognizing that I was on the most powerful governing body at the local level, the County Commission, where I served all the citizens here, with the city of Wilmington being our largest municipality, and recognizing the fact that serving in that capacity, you are the face for your community. You are that conduit. One thing, as I mentioned before, serving on Governor Stein's transition team, being a county commissioner, I am that connective tissue between county government and state government, making sure that we can get what we need in our community. Being on Governor Stein's transition team gives me direct access to him and his chief of staff. So if there's something that we need in our community, a phone call, it's all I got to do. I've got a cell phone number, both him and the chief of staff on my phone, but also the county elected officials, the county commissioners, the staff there.
Okay.
Being a county commissioner for 16 years, I have that ability to bridge the gap and okay. bring everyone together.
Thank you, sir. Next, for the umbrella question, I'm going to bring up my colleague, Kelly Kenoyer of WHQR.
Hi, folks. Thanks for sticking around for the mayor's forum. We have asked this question in every forum for the past 5 years, and we'll continue needing to ask it in some formulation for the foreseeable future. Wilmington has become unaffordable for many of its residents, to the point that some who were born and raised here are leaving the community to find affordability elsewhere. What will you, as a member of council, do about this? We'll start with you, Mr. Sappho.
Well, we have done something about it. We've set aside 1 cent out of the property tax rate for affordable housing. In the last 5 years, we have spent $23 million to create over 1,000 units of affordable housing, 30% AMI, 60% and 80% AMI. It's important that government plays some role in subsidizing it. And although sometimes people have an issue with that, I also want to remind people, especially those that are in real estate business, if we didn't have FHA, VA funding, we would probably not build 90% of the houses in this country. Government does play a very active role, and this city has been playing an active role since I've been on the city council. And we've been doing it with money. We haven't been just talking about it. We have been funding it. Thank you.
You know, I'm going to stop the mayor wrapped up his comments there. This is what I find so ironic, not even the word to use. Interesting is not the word to use. It's just what you consistently hear, and you even heard in the preface question from Kelly Kenoyer, oh, we've been asking this for 5 years. We're going to continue to ask it. And then you have Mayor Sappho saying, well, we've done a lot. We've invested $23 million. We take a cent out of this and that and fund all this money for affordable housing. At what point do you say maybe that's not the solution to the problem? If you've invested $23 million into something, and many would argue, many would argue that the affordable housing issue, the whatever that term exactly means, is worse now than it was just a couple of years ago. And so you really have to begin to ask yourself and think, okay, we've invested a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of resources into said problem, whether it's the city of Wilmington or New Hanover County. What kind of ROI are we getting? What kind of response are we getting from the significant amount of taxpayer dollars that we are investing? It's been a lot. It's tens of millions of dollars between the county and the city over just the last 4 or 5 calendar years. This is not small sums of money. We're not talking about a couple $100,000. We're talking about tens of millions. And the so-called issue of affordable housing, if you go on Facebook or go talk to people that live in Wilmington, they will tell you it's worse now than it was 5 years ago. And so maybe we need to back away from the solution to this from a government perspective is just funneling more money into it and figure out how we can cut down on red tape, cut down on regulation, and make it so that housing can actually be built in an affordable manner. I mean, it just, something doesn't add up when I hear this constant discussion over and over again. We're doing something about it. We're spending all of this money. Go poll the people of Wilmington. They'll tell you the problem hasn't gotten any better. And that just, that needs to be said, and that needs to be part of the discussion. We'll continue with the candidate forum.
The same question to you, Mr. Barfield. What will you do about the affordability crisis in Wilmington?
You know, I have one daughter that's still at home that I don't think will ever leave my house. She won't leave. She can't afford to leave. You know, as a county commissioner.
And I'm going to stop Barfield once again. He always talks about this, always talks about his daughter who lives at home and can't afford to leave. Yet Jonathan Barfield Jr. has voted for every single tax increase in New Hanover County since he's been on the commission. I got into a heated exchange with him a couple of years ago at a county commission meeting over this same thing. It talks about his, I have a daughter that can't afford to live in Wilmington. Jonathan, you are one of the individuals single-handedly responsible for continuing to raise property taxes in New Hanover County. I will say this till I'm blue in the face. You cannot make housing more affordable by raising people's taxes. You are, by definition, making housing less affordable. I can't even believe I have to say this. But you are making housing less affordable. You are making housing less accessible when you raise taxes. When it costs me $500 or $1,000 more per year to pay my property taxes, by definition, I have less money in my pocket, and by definition, my housing has become less affordable. You don't have to have a freaking PhD in economics to understand how this works. Yet you will consistently hear from Democrats out of one side of their mouth talking about how important affordable housing is, and on the other side, they will talk about how the solution to the problem is jacking up your property taxes, which, by the way, hurts everybody. Whether you own a house, rent a condo, own a condo, or rent an apartment. It doesn't matter if you're a renter or an owner. If property taxes are going up, you are paying more. Your landlord is going to push that cost onto you. It is one of the reasons that you've seen rents go up. Not the exclusive reason and not the only reason, but it is part of the reason why rents continue to go upwards in Wilmington. As property taxes go up, especially if you're somebody that lives in the city of Wilmington, as those property taxes go up on these multi-million dollar developments, somebody is paying that fee. And it is not the property owner. It is the single individual working a part-time job that is paying the increase in property taxes. So you have to keep that in mind. You can't talk about housing affordability with your solution being, raise everybody's taxes. That sure as hell is going to help the problem. Jonathan Barfield is the worst example of this. Will always advocate for raising taxes and then complain that his daughter can't afford, his daughter can't afford to move out of his house because rent is too expensive, properties are too expensive. Jonathan, look in the mirror. You're the one that has been constantly and consistently advocating for raising people's property taxes. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
And I was really proud that we supported investing $15 million over 5 years in housing affordability.
How's that worked out?
$3 million a year. The first product that was delivered was Estrella Landing, apartments off of Gordon Road and College, I-40. This builder got low-income tax credits. There's one senior citizen that's living there with a one-bedroom, brand-new apartment, brand-new appliances, paying $335 a month. That's a real dividend, something you don't see in our community. Then we partnered with New Beginning Christian Church in Castle Hayne, where they built a senior housing community. It's going to take real dollars being invested, not just loans, but real dollars invested with developers that are getting these low-income tax credits to build these affordable units. But I really want people to own homes, because when you own a house, that's where you build generational wealth. When you're paying rent, you're paying someone else's mortgage. I want you to have your own home so you can pass that down to your children, your grandchildren, and have that generational wealth for years to come.
And again, how can you do that if you're jacking up people's property taxes?
Repeat the whole question, though.
Wilmington has become unaffordable for many of its residents, to the point that some who were born and raised here are leaving the community to find affordability elsewhere. What will you, as a member of council, do about this?
Well, I think a point of that question was missed. We're talking about residents who already live here. They're trying to stay here. They're trying to afford their houses that they're living in. Some people are getting taxed out. Some people are on extremely, budgeted incomes. And keeping some money aside is great, but, and building all this, affordable housing is great too. But what happens to the citizens who actually live here that have houses or have homes that are still trying to afford to stay here? That's the real question, I believe. So, maybe some type of tax credit for individuals who are elderly, maybe using some of the money from the city to try and keep them in their homes. An idea I have is folks who, again, have been living here a long time and their houses are dilapidated. What can the city do to help them get that house back up and time's up.
All right, candidates. My next question, we'll start with you, Mr. Craig. What should the role of City Council be in addressing homelessness, and what specific actions would you support beyond what's already been done to help curb its rise?
I think we really need to lean on, and I don't mean lean on, that's a horrible, horrible thing to say, because they've done so much, but the Good Shepherd House has done so much. There are a lot of nonprofits here that do things, but everybody's kind of in their own lane. Places like the Good Shepherd House, the Good Shepherd Ministries, they actually get people into homes or into somewhere they can actually live and call their own, or you know, call that space theirs. They could even, I think right now they're at 240 families is what they're handling, or 240 people, whereas pre-COVID, I think it was like 170. The city does have a lot of compassion and care, and a lot of folks have compassion and care. They're reaching out to our religious leaders, religious communities, trying to do anything and everything we can to help the homeless.
Thank you. And to you, Mr. Sappo, what should the role of City Council be in addressing homelessness?
Well, the City Council should play a role in it and has been playing a role in it. We invest over $1 million a year in homeless services and working with our homeless providers. We have over 27 homeless providers in this community. We also rezoned for the Healing Place under withering opposition to that particular facility that helps a lot of people that are homeless. Homelessness is people need homes. The City of Wilmington is the government that has supported Lakeside Reserve of 48 units with supportive services. And we're about to put 33 units of supportive housing with supportive services again on Carolina Beach Road. That's the way you fix homelessness. You have to get people units, and you have to make the commitment to invest in them and not just talk about it. Thank you.
I'm going to pause again. I'm not trying to beat up too much on Mayor Sappho, but I will use the same tone and the same tune that I used about housing affordability. Okay, we hear you, Bill. Yes, the city, and as Billy Craig said, has a lot of compassion. We do. We, once again, have invested millions upon millions of dollars to solve the so-called homeless issue that exists in the city of Wilmington. Yet, if you go downtown, yet if you look at the data, yet if you look at the numbers, the problem is getting worse. Ladies and gentlemen, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So many of the issues that we deal with, and these are not inherently exclusive to Wilmington, but so many of the issues that government deals with, the solution, this tends to be more of an issue predominantly on the left, is just funnel more money at the problem. If we can just spend tens of millions of more dollars on said problem, then we will solve it. And some issues truly can be solved by money. Some can. But I would venture to guess that more than half cannot. Is money a part of the equation? Sure. But it is not the end-all be-all. This is a philosophical difference between those on the left and right. Most individuals on the left are of the mindset that if you just pour more money into something, the problem goes away. History and government would show us that that is, in fact, not the solution to most of the problems. And the homeless thing is just like affordable housing. The city and the county, once again, have pissed away millions upon millions of dollars in so-called homeless resources and dealing with the problem of homelessness, yet it is worse now than it was just a couple of years ago. When do we step back? When do we kind of pause, reflect, and say, we've spent millions of dollars and the problem doesn't seem to be getting any better. What else can we do? Is there something that we can pivot to? Is there something that we are missing? Let's go back to the drawing board and figure out some other thing to try. And again, you're going to have to try things. Is everything going to be successful? No. Is everything going to work out as it is intended on paper? No, it's not. I mean, it's the reality is reality. But you are not going to find me sitting here and saying, oh yeah, like just like everything else, solution to the problem, raise your taxes more and have the city of Wilmington spend more money. It's just frankly not the solution.
Thank you. And now to you, Mr. Barfield, what should the role of city council be in addressing homelessness?
One role it shouldn't be in is criminalizing being homeless.
Ah, yes.
There's this thing called compassion in the fact that these are our neighbors.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I'm proud that I led the county several years ago in providing social workers to work with our homeless population in downtown in particular. We provided what we call den bins where they could actually store their stuff in locked facilities so they can go out and look for work, get the resources that they need, to get the help that they needed as well. Supported Building the Healing Place, a county facility that houses those that have substance use disorders, but also when we had terrible weather here, it opened up the doors for those folks that were homeless. When the pandemic took place, the county provided hotels for every person that was homeless to make sure they weren't spreading COVID-19 within those homeless encampments. You know, my phrase is that, but for the grace of God, there go I. That could be Jonathan Barfield Jr. walking those streets. There are so many people that are one paycheck away from being in that same position. So why do you criminalize something and cause people to have citations as opposed to opening up opportunities? As a county commissioner, I supported funding the Good Shepherd. Other initiatives such as the Eden Village and others that we've supported to indeed help those folks that are out there on the streets.
Thank you.
I'll bring it up again. As Barfield just mentioned, we're just some of these people, most of them are one paycheck away from being homeless. So what is the solution to that problem? Let's raise their county and city taxes. I mean, right, you're already living paycheck to paycheck. I didn't say that. You just heard that from Jonathan Barfield. He was sat on the county commission for 16 freaking years. So everybody's already living paycheck to paycheck. They're just one paycheck away from being out on the street. And the solution is, you know, we'll just raise your taxes 30-something, 35-40%. No problem. No issue. Just a small little increase. Yeah, you're paycheck to paycheck. Yeah. Yeah, it's fine. 30%. We got to spend more money. We got to hire more employees. We got to pay a new assistant city manager $250,000 a year. Great. It's going to help the homeless problem. That'll help affordability. Just keep raising everybody's taxes. Great idea, Jonathan. Always.
I'm Delaney Tarpley with WECT News. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you guys for sticking around. Or if you're new, welcome. This question, we're going to start with Mr. Barfield. The character of Wilmington is changing as more houses and apartments are built on existing land. What should be the balance between green space and development, and how can city council play a role in determining that?
You know, I've been a big proponent of parks in our community. You know, having grown up here, now this is where I was raised. The county put a lot of money in the Longleaf Park, into our Northern Regional Park, opening up Hanover Pines Reserve, a new park down in the southern part of the county, expanding those opportunities, partnering with the city to take in Echo Farms and building a park there, going out to the northern part of the county and getting Olson Park as well. To me, it should be more invested in parks. I'm at Longleaf Park every day, walking 3.25 miles. Most days I have my grandson with me. We walk those 3.25 miles, then we walk over to the playground. He swings for 12 or 15 minutes, then we walk the playground itself. He's almost 2 years old. We're in the park every day. I love the green spaces that we have. When it comes to building here, there ought to be green space built into every community that's built in our community to let folks have that sense of place and peace. You find that when you're walking outside, it helps your mental health. That's one reason why I'm out there walking every day. It's being around nature is something that's really good for the soul. So again, as a county commissioner, I've supported all those initiatives, and I want to do more. And I've got some improvement ideas for the city's parks. As a grandparent of a 2-year-old, finding ways to have playground equipment that works for little kids.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Craig, what should be the balance between green space and development, and how can city council play a role in determining that?
Well, I think city council needs to definitely take a look and make sure that whatever zoning is there probably needs to be readdressed. Some of these high-density areas are causing a lot of problems with their infrastructure. That could, you know, be it the stormwater, electrical grid, or the roads itself. I've really been thinking here lately about the environmental impact that has, so the heat signature with places like that, with all the parking, that causes an issue. When you're taking down trees, you're getting rid of a natural deterrent to flooding. You can put all the retention ponds you want, but they'll overflow too, because that was what we saw in Florence. There were places in town that never flooded that flooded, and vice versa. I believe the city really needs to pay attention with these builders and make sure that they adhere to the four corners of the contract of what they're going to do and not going to do.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Sappho, what should be the balance between green space and development, and how can City Council play a role in determining that?
Well, in almost every development in this community, a percentage of it has to be kept for green space. The developer privately has to do that. If you look at the land use plan and read, if you want to read several hundred pages, go right ahead. But a percentage of that is protected for open space and green space. The other thing is the city has over 700 acres of park land, over 30-some parks. I am proud to say that we have partnered with the county on Echo Farms when Echo Farms was developed for a park. Olson Park, another 90 acres. The Bryant Tract, which I believe that the city should partner with the county if possible, some 80 acres right there off of Independence Boulevard within the incorporated city limits, another good partnership that we can work out with the with this community, as well as the Encino Park that we did up on 421. Although outside of the incorporated city limits, it plays an important role for soccer and sports complexes and stuff like that. We should also look for ways to put our walking trails around our parks like we did at Echo Farms. And the other thing I will say is 50% of the beach renourishment money comes from the city of Wilmington to help you nourish your beaches. Those beaches are also considered parkland, people where they can walk. We also make significant investments outside of the incorporated city limits for our communities. Thank you.
All right, this question will first go to Bill Sappho. The endowment controls more than $1 billion of public money from the sale of NHRMC to Novant Health. How would you describe the job that the board is doing, and how would you go about building a better relationship with that group?
Well, first of all, it's been rocky, to say the least. Obviously, that's a significant gift and asset for our community, and they're going to play a very important role in helping a lot of nonprofits, helping people in public health, helping this community as a whole, and they have to spend that money into New Hanover County. You have to build relationships with people. You have to build relationships with the people on the endowment, and also understand how that endowment is going to work. What's the rules of engagement? How do we operate together? I believe personally that the endowment will look to partner with the city as well as the county. If we jointly do it together, they would be the third wheel of this particular stool, or the third leg of that stool. And I think they play a very important role, but it's going to have to be city and county initiatives working together. That's why park space, open space is critically important to how we work together and work with the endowment to make it happen. And building that relationship with the endowment is extremely important.
Same question to Jonathan Barfield. How would you describe the job the Board of the Endowment is doing, and how would you go about building a better relationship with that group?
I think I already have a relationship with folks that are there, being that I was one of those that helped establish the endowment. You know,
sold the
endowment
hospital,
for me is a game changer, and it can be a game changer if they play their cards right. You know, I was thankful to see this last round of investment in our community, investing in our public schools, investing in nonprofits that are serving our youth. Those are things that are near and dear to my heart. You know, I don't know that they can think big enough. When you think you're going to have $60 to $70 or $80 million a year coming in that you can invest in your community, many people have not seen that kind of money. I thought about Michael Jordan when he came and donated $10 million to build those two Michael Jordan clinics. What would it be like to be able to give $10 million away and not even think about it? You know, I don't know what that's like, but we have an endowment that has the ability to have that type of an effect on our community, where we could change the outcomes of people's lives forever, ever, and ever, if they work together and partner with these nonprofits. And I'm thankful to see that they're now investing more in the local nonprofits that are the engines of our community here.
Mr. Craig, how would you describe the job the Board of the Endowment is doing, and how would you go about building a better relationship with that group?
Well, I believe the job that they were doing was extremely stressful, and I don't think it was very productive for the first part. Again, I believe that they're supposed to spend 4% a year under their 501c or their umbrella. So was it $1.5 million? Is that about right? So was that $60 million? And yeah, I don't think they've spent $60 million this year. If they don't spend the money next year, it bumps up to 5%. So that means you got to spend more. And if they don't spend then what happens to that money? Are they going to lose their their designation? Building relationships. I've built relationships with anybody and everybody. You know, I think we need to lean on them a little bit harder as the city. Really sit down with them and say, well, what are you going to do for us? Because the city lies inside the county. You know, I mean, we're here just like everybody else, and we need their help.
Thank you.
Candidates, our last umbrella question is about public safety.
Before we get into the public safety question, I'll just note, I mean, the endowment has, for the most part, I'm not saying it's been a complete failure, but it has been anything but smooth. And it's unfortunate that none of the candidates brought up that there's been three leaders of the endowment within the span of, or four leaders of the endowment, if you consider some of the interim individuals, over the last couple of years. There's been so much turnover. There's been so much money and effort spent doing these national searches to find individuals to lead it. They serve in the position for 9-10 months, and then they leave. There's obviously something wrong with the endowment. I'm not saying that because I have any sort of internal information. I'm not saying that because I've got some sort of inside track on what's going on. But when you are paying somebody a very healthy salary to take over the endowment, and then they are leaving that position within the span of less than a calendar year, you might begin the process of saying, well, maybe something here is not working exactly as it is intended to be. We'll continue with this candidate forum that took place, hosted by WECT, WHQR Public Media, and Port City Daily, as they'll get into the question on public safety. And then these are the umbrella questions that all three get asked. Then some more specific questions for each of the individual candidates. As the early voting period does continue today across the city of Wilmington, Wrightsville Beach, Carolina, and Curie Beach, all ahead of the November the 4th municipal election date. Want to just again remind you that does continue early voting opening today at 8 o'clock. It is closed this weekend, but then reopens on Monday and will be open pretty much through the remainder of that early voting period. Don't forget that the Nick Craig Show, if you are listening after the fact, streams live weekday mornings, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook, and of course available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. We'll get a quick word from Wilmington City Councilman Luke Waddell, and we'll continue the discussion and listening to this candidate forum coming up after this, as the Nick Craig Show rolls on live this morning, YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook.
I'm Luke Waddell, and I'm running for re-election to Wilmington City Council. 4 years ago, I promised strong, principled leadership. Leadership focused on public safety, infrastructure, and fiscal responsibility. I have worked every day to deliver on that promise, voting against unnecessary tax increases and wasteful spending while strongly supporting our police and fire departments. I'm ready to continue working for you. Please go to the polls and vote Luke Waddell for Wilmington City Council. Thank you.
Paid for by committee to elect Luke Waddell.
And a good Friday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show as we continue our coverage this morning of the Wilmington mayor race heading your way. Well, right now during early voting and everything culminating on November the 4th, three individuals running for mayor, longtime incumbent Democrat Bill Saffo, former New Hanover County Commissioner Jonathan Barfield Jr., and 30-year law enforcement member Billy Craig. And as we continue with our coverage from this WECT candidate debate, the question now about public safety. This is a major issue across the city of Wilmington. Let's take a listen to see what the candidates have to say.
The city has had some trouble hiring and retaining police officers, and there's some debate over what style of policing WPD should follow. Mr. Craig, I'd like your answer first to the question. Now that there's a new police chief in place, what role do you think the mayor and city council should take to help improve the police department?
I don't think I have enough time for a minute.
You can try.
Yeah, I'm a retired cop. I'm retired from the city of Wilmington. I worked there for a long time. Most of my work was violent crimes from 2000 until I retired. I've already met the chief. He seems like a good guy. I've actually had contact with the former special agent in charge in Virginia, who knows him, and he gives him a thumbs up. I felt with Ralph Evangelos. Ralph gives him a thumbs up. And so far, just my meeting and what everybody else has said, that they really like him. You need to let him do his job. The city needs to basically stay out of his way and let him come in and say, this is what we need to do. There was a lot of stress that was caused, mm-hmm. unfortunately, by the last administration. It caused a lot of good people to leave. And we're talking 10, 15-year veterans, homicide detectives, that left to go work in Leland, let's say.
Okay, thank you, sir. Mr. Saffo, there's a new police chief in place. What role do you think the mayor and city council should take to help improve the police department?
Well, first and foremost, I think Chief Zudem exudes leadership, and I believe that that department is going to have a good leader in charge. The other part of it is salaries. Obviously, in the last two budget cycles, we have supported giving police officers, as well as other city staff, additional monies for salary, because we think that is very important to retain officers in our community. And obviously, the chief is going to come to us with a significant amount of things that they're going to need over time, radios, cars, you name it. And, you know, the city council is going to have to also appropriate funding to make certain that those officers have the necessary equipment to do the job. It's a tough job, 140-some thousand calls for service every single year, the busiest department in the city by far, and the number one department in regards to expenditures of over 40-some million dollars. It's a significant department, and I believe we've got a really good person in charge there, and I believe that we're going to get we're going to make sure that we're going to get that staffing up to where it needs to be, and where there be with added bonuses and additional salary.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Barfield, there's a new police chief in place. What role do you think the mayor and council should take to help improve the police department? 60 seconds, sir.
For me, the council actually sets the tone for the culture. The council is the ultimate leader of the organization because they hire the police chief. You have to take care of your people. I often say that I can show you where your heart is if you show me your checkbook register, because we spend money on what we value. And what we don't value right now is our police department, because we're not paying them enough. When you see a department that is 80 billets low, that means you're not investing in what you should be investing in. As a county commissioner, we increase the pay for our first responders, our sheriff's department, time and time and time again to make sure that they felt the love from the county, number one, felt appreciated, number two, and felt valued by the citizens in our community. You have to take care of your people. The people are the engine behind law enforcement, behind the whole perception of public safety. And if you don't feel the love, you're not going to do your job well. You look at what's happening right now with TSA, folks that are calling out. You're seeing some of the same phenomena right now with our police department, as folks are not feeling the love from the city. We need to pay those folks, do a pay study, and then not just go at the average, but go above that to make sure that they are having jobs where they can live in this community. Okay. As a realtor, I see more police cars in Brazos County because they can't afford to live here because of their pay.
Okay, thank you, sir. Next round will be from our reporters. You'll have 90 seconds for each response. These are questions that were sent in by our viewers, listeners, and readers. And we're going to start with Kelly Kinnear.
This first question is for Jonathan Barfield. The Wilmington area is consistently ranked as one of the most dangerous to bike and walk in. A pedestrian named Mark Emery was just struck and killed this past weekend. Yet infrastructure improvements to protect vulnerable road users aren't a high priority for the city. What do you think City Council should do to protect pedestrians and cyclists?
We'll hear Barfield's response, but I'll remind everybody that roadways and infrastructure and stuff is not handled by the city of Wilmington. It is the responsibility of the North Carolina Department of Transportation.
I think an enhanced campaign on public safety when it comes to bikers, number one. I know we have this Be a Looker campaign with the Wilmington MPO, and we have billboards to talk about Be a Looker. But the citizens here need to wake up and recognize that people are biking every day. I bike often. I live right where the Cross City Trail begins, and I ride my bike on the Cross City Trail quite often. And as I cross College Road, you have folks that aren't paying attention at those crosswalks there. And I saw a gentleman almost get hit the other day. We can have all the bike lanes you want in your community, but if the public is not paying attention, you're going to see people get hit over and over and over again. So we have to educate the public on bicycle safety, number one. Encourage folks to use these trails. I used to take my bike, as I do have a rack on the back of my vehicle as well, to the park, but it's too cumbersome there. So I ride in my neighborhood. I feel safe in my neighborhood. I ride about 7 miles a day with my grandson on the front of my bike. Me and this guy, we hang out a good bit. So I'm definitely into biking and in those kind of things.
Thank you.
This question is for Mr. Craig from one of our viewers. The city owns a good deal of vacant properties. Why not have a designated campground for unhoused folks to be permitted in if we are making normal public spaces unavailable to them? That's from one of our viewers.
I don't think a tent city would really be the answer, though. Is it a good temporary thing? Possibly. but you want to help those folks get back to where, you know, where they feel safe and where they came from. I'm not meaning like kicking people out of town, but people show up here and they're originally from Arizona. It's like, okay, how can we help you get back to Arizona? Not that we're going to hand you a ticket, but how can we help you get back there? How can we help you establish contact with family and friends so you're back with a positive support structure? The only concern, I have several concerns about, doing something like that. One, who's gonna watch it? You have all other kinds of things to think about. We've had situations where some of the homeless camps caught on fire because they don't know or they didn't pay attention to simple fire safety. I mean, as a Boy Scout, I remember you always built a fire this big and made 8 feet out to make sure nothing else caught on fire. But it just doesn't seem to happen that way. I really like to look more into that, though, and study it to find out what may be the pros and cons of that.
I'm going to jump in, not on Billy's response, but on the question. What a ridiculously stupid question. And as the reporter noted, this came from our community. What a great idea. So we're going to take city property and turn it into a homeless camp. What a phenomenal freaking idea. Can you get any more incompetent with a solution to a problem? Let's make it so that the homeless population in the city of Wilmington has a tent city on taxpayer-owned land. As, of course, the discussion from those on the left is, it is now a criminal to be homeless. You're a criminal if you're homeless. No, you're a criminal if you're smoking crack at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Wednesday in downtown Wilmington. You're a criminal if you're pissing on the side of the street. You're a criminal if you're walking around drunk. You're a criminal if you're harassing individuals. If you're defecating in front of people's doorsteps. I mean, just all of the things that are happening in downtown Wilmington. And the grandiose solution from the radical progressive left, who obviously asked this question, and I don't know why it was asked, but whatever, is, we just use some vacant city property and just turn it into a tent city so that when there are conflicts that break out, when people are raped and killed and stabbed and shot, which happens in all of these homeless camps, it's happened at the ones here in Wilmington, then it can be on city property. That's a great idea. So we'll open the city of Wilmington up to millions of dollars worth of litigation when somebody is raped, stabbed, shot, or killed on their compassionate homeless camp that they want to build. What a ridiculously stupid concept, idea, and question.
Thank you.
My question is for you, Mr. Sappho. Where do you see our infrastructure in 20 years, and how do you plan to move it there?
Well, I see the infrastructure obviously improving and being extended over time. Obviously, water and sewer is a very important part of it, which K for Public Utility extends that based on what the board decides and the improvements to those particular facilities. Roadway improvements in this city, in this community, in this region will continue to grow. The state's going to have to figure another way to give funding or to allow cities and counties to fund roads and bridges. We can't wait 10, 15, 20 years for interchanges anymore in roads with the amount of population growth that is moving into this, not only city, but to this state, being the third fastest growing state in the country. We need more resources from the state. Remember, the state of North Carolina owns all the major roadways in the city of Wilmington, and they have a responsibility to also help improve upon those roadways. And you can't do it on the gas tax anymore. You're gonna have to find other methods and other means to be able to fund these transportation initiatives, which is a lot of what people are talking about these days.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is straight back to you, Mr. Mayor. You voted in favor of the recent homelessness ordinance championed by Luke Waddell. It was contentious, so can you explain your vote?
Yes. When the vote first came up several, 2 months ago, I decided we had a lot more discussion to make on it. We sat down, met with a lot of the homeless providers. We came back. I think we worked on a pretty significant policy that I think is fair and equitable. It was done in a bipartisan fashion. First of all, we did not criminalize it. A misdemeanor, class 3, and an infraction. Look at it on your phones. See the difference between the two of them. We decriminalized it. You can't get, it doesn't go against your record. And if you get a fine and you don't pay, you're not going to jail, okay? First and foremost. Number two, we went said we're going to go with social workers. We're going to go. We're going to approach people that are homeless, not with police officers, but with social workers, because we thought that was important. We're already advertising for those social workers at a cost of $500,000. And then I also said that if we had any available property that we could give to a nonprofit for low barrier shelter, we should do it and work with the nonprofit. But also understand that wherever this shelter is going to be put, that we also have to work with the neighborhood that might have impacts because of it. So I thought it was a fair and good policy. I know it was contentious, but at the same time, you have to be humane to the people that are out there on the street, first and foremost, no doubt about it. But you also have to also address the issues that a lot of our citizens have been calling us about. One of the things that have not been reported is the over 1,900 calls for services of citizens that are calling us saying, please help us with some of these initiatives. We need to give more money to nonprofits. They need more beds. They need more resources, and we're going to do that.
I think that was actually a really good answer there by Mayor Saffa. The question set up was, of course, the same thing that we've talked about and you've heard. You're criminalizing individuals that are homeless. It's a false premise from the start. And I appreciate the final commentary there from Mayor Saffa. Everybody wants to talk about the compassionate nature. Everybody wants to talk about, oh, well, what kind of services can we provide? Yet nobody wants to talk about the plea from downtown business owners for the problem to be solved. Nobody talks about the individuals living downtown that have to deal with this problem day in and day out. And that is a huge missing part of the equation. You've got taxpaying businesses and citizens within the city of Wilmington that, as you just heard from the mayor, have called more than 1,900 calls to 911, calls for service, to deal with problems surrounding homelessness. If you don't talk about that in the greater scheme of the problem, you obviously are not going to find a solution. It is absolutely impossible. You just can't do it.
This next question is for Mr. Barfield. As a county commissioner for several years, you sat on a board of five, but as mayor, you would be leading a council of seven and at the same time representing a smaller population. How will this impact your decision-making and also the process of your decision-making?
I don't think the process will change at all. You know, in my 16 years as the county commissioner, my first 6 years, I was the only Democrat on the board, but I served as chair twice and vice chair twice. Having the ability to work across party lines, it's all about relationships, really. You know, as you work with each other, you get to know that we're really no different at the end of the day. So finding those commonalities and building upon those things, I think I know everyone that's on council now. I've had relationships with those folks for quite a long time. Again, having served in county government for 16 years, you build relationships and you know who people are and people know who you are as well. At the end of the day, I'm a people person. I've taken so many leadership development courses over my time. I have the ability to do just that.
Okay, thank you.
And to you, Mr. Craig, you told Port City Daily you believe in a win-win situation when it comes to balancing housing supply, affordability, and residents' desire to often keep density low. What does that look like to you?
Well, it falls back to partnerships, especially with builders. Whatever we can get the percentage-wise and like bumping the percentage up to help house individuals would be great. Everything you do, everything's a compromise, and that's what we really have to work on is compromise. We have to sit down, look across the table from each other without egos, without our own idea of how things are done, pay attention to what the other person's saying, and work out a plan and stick to that plan. Because every now and then, I don't know if I've noticed, but it seems like plans get made and they just get changed so much. Which causes other issues.
Thank you.
All right, for round three, we're going to start with you again, Billy Craig. This is from a Port City Daily Reader. How would you respond to the federal government mobilizing the National Guard or military without the governor's request in the city of Wilmington?
Again, what a ridiculous question. There has been no discussion whatsoever of the federal government mobilizing the National Guard in the city of Wilmington. Absolutely zero. This is a debate for the mayor of the city of Wilmington and we are being asked. It's just, it's a ridiculous question. And if, no surprise, it's a reader of Port City Daily. Imagine my shock when I found that out. Let's see what Billy Craig's got to say.
That's come up several times. All right. So here, I'm trying to just make a real short story here. If a department does not follow a lawful order, that department, no matter if they're city or county, have now put themselves in jeopardy of losing funding, of losing employees, because now you have dereliction of duty, and you're looking at civil and criminal penalties. That's one. The other thing is, you know, you're not going to know if it happens. This is going to be a situation where they just show up. I keep hearing, like, well, the governor's going to know. No, if it gets mobilized, more than likely they're not going to know until it shows up. If an officer or a, you know, or a deputy sheriff does not follow the law, and that is driving down the road, you stop somebody, and they got a federal detainer on them, if they do not follow the law says you shall arrest. Not you can arrest or you may arrest, as you shall arrest. So they need to follow a lawful order. They need to follow the law. If something ends up becoming illegal or something is defined as unconstitutional, I'll be the first one to stand up and say, this is wrong. I've sworn an oath my entire life to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the state of North Carolina. And I had to do it every 2 years when I was assigned and sworn as a federal marshal for the last 15 years of my career working in counterterrorism. So, yeah, I'll be the first one to protect your rights. But if you do wrong, I'll be the first one to tell you wrong, and you got to go.
Thank you.
Great answer from Billy on a completely ridiculous question.
Okay, this question's for Bill Saffo. On your campaign website, you mentioned wanting to preserve the city's tree canopy, and in a recent forum, you spoke about wanting to strengthen the city's tree ordinance. What specifically would you like to implement to achieve these goals?
Well, we did strengthen the tree ordinance. We reduced a number of caliper, the size of the caliper of the tree that you can cut down. If you cut down a 4-inch tree, you're going to have to replace it 1-for-1. If you cut down a 6-inch tree, you're going to have to replace it 2-to-1. We've also put significant fines to date. I think the city has almost $2 million in tree mitigation fines from folks that have cut down trees. Last night, we spent $577,000 for 641 new trees to be planted. I personally feel that if elected, I would love to revisit the tree ordinance, working with the Alliance for Cape Fear Trees, working with our tree commission, working with citizens, because it seems like nobody likes it. And we've gone through two renditions of this particular ordinance, and I think it just needs to be revisited. I believe that we should have some percentage of the lot that is protected no matter what. And I think because the fines are definitely not stopping somebody from cutting down the trees, they would rather pay the fine and save the tree. And of course, there's a lot of issues that go into that in respect to stormwater things, utilities you have to put in. It affects how trees are protected and how development is done, and working with the state legislature, because a lot of people don't realize state legislature plays also a significant role on wherever the significant improvements are going to be made, where the roads are going to be, where the lot's going to be, where the house is going to be built, driveways. Those builders and developers can take down those trees without having to pay a fine. That's a state statute and a state law. But I think we do need to revisit the tree ordinance in this community for certain. Thank you.
And to you, Mr. Barfield, this is from a constituent downtown. They say, one of the problems I face is a lack of mixed use spread throughout neighborhoods. Most commercial is focused on UMX collector corridors or in the CBD. Would you support a reworking of the comprehensive plans to allow more neighborhood commercial closer to residential areas to promote walkability and neighborhood cohesion?
You know, that's something that has to happen. When you go to your Charlottes and your Raleighs, you see your grocery stores intermixed with your regular homes downtown, whether it be in an apartment complex with a Harris Teeter right there on the bottom floor and apartments above. You know, finding ways to intertwine those things, bring services closer to people, is something that's very important. Having a downtown pharmacy is definitely important. You know, having closer access to health care is definitely important downtown. All those things, I think, are important. You know, just having a Dollar General on Water Street, to me, is not enough. And looking at the number of rooftops that have taken place downtown over the last several years, I'm happy to see them. And I know folks are desperately wanting to have a grocery store downtown. Where I live, I can walk less than half a mile to an Aldi, right across the street to a Food Line, a little further down, less than a mile to a Publix. You know, those same facilities, as well as fast food restaurants, those same things should be in close proximity to every neighborhood so that folks are not getting in their cars so much, but have access to those things and those amenities to make their community better for them.
Thank you.
That's going to end the line of questioning from our reporters. We're going to give each one of the candidates 90 seconds for a closing statement.
So there's really nothing amazing that comes out of the closing statements there. So that is kind of how this, not kind of, that's exactly how this candidate forum shook out last week, hosted by, again, WECT, WHQR, and Port City Daily. Again, the breakdown, you've got current Wilmington Mayor Bill Saffo, a Democrat, running for re-election, former New Hanover County Commissioner and Jonathan Barfield Jr., who lost his election, his bid back to the County Commission in November of last year, seeking that same position, also a Democrat, and a Republican, Billy Craig. I will, without being overly critical, I don't think that the mayor, and this is the fourth or fifth time now that I've watched this thing, it seemed the questions for the mayoral candidates, I don't really think they just didn't seem as good as the city council candidates. I don't know if they just didn't want to repeat the same questions, which I understand from a public standpoint. Just didn't seem like with any of the real questions or answers, you got a whole hell of a lot of useful information out of any of the candidates. And I think it was just due to the fact that the questions overall were either way too broad or so specific that, you know, they're just didn't feel like there was a lot of information. So that's where we stand. Early voting again opens, actually just opened as we're here live, just after 8 o'clock, runs through 5 p.m. tonight, reopens starting early next week on Monday. We'll provide that early voting schedule as some additional early voting sites do open throughout southeastern North Carolina as well. We'll keep you up to date right here on the Nick Craig Show. Another busy week here coming up a little bit later on this afternoon, a major national story happening as President Donald Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky will be meeting in the Oval Office. The last time Zelensky was in the Oval Office, he was literally kicked out by Trump and J.D. Vance and this administration for acting like a complete and total jackass. So hopefully after the conversations that have been unfolding over the last couple of months, a similar situation doesn't unfold. That is going to be happening this afternoon, and I'll keep you up to date on our social media channels with that. And of course, anything that is relevant and breaking, we'll have coming up for you Monday morning right here on the Nick Craig Show. Thanks to Melissa Gott and her team over at the Law Group for their continued support. Reach out to them, 910-251-6088, or for any other legal questions, lawgroupnc.com. The Nick Craig Show streams live weekday morning, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great weekend. We're back with you Monday morning right here on The Nick Craig Show.